How do we work with a client who's too ashamed to admit their feelings? Some clients have an especially difficult time opening up to others. They often have a long history of being ridiculed or shunned for the way that they feel. But Dr. Marcia Linehan sees this history as an opportunity for change. And Marcia believes that in order to overcome rejection, you must first invite it in.
The most important thing to know about shame is that it's an emotion. And all emotions have functions. From an evolutionary point of view, there's a value to every one of our emotions. And the first thing you have to figure out is what's the evolutionary value of shame? Okay. And shame is such a difficult and painful emotion that most people aren't aware that it actually has important functions. So if you look back at an evolutionary point of view and you ask, why is it that humans have shame? The main reason humans have shame is to protect them from being kicked out of the community. And so shame is the emotion that makes you immediately want to hide whatever it is you're doing, if that someone else, if they found out about it, would kick you out. Now, right now, historically, if we got kicked out of a community, we'd more than likely be able to stay alive, perhaps build another life, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But way back, a long time ago, it was that if you got kicked out of your community, you ended up dead very reasonably quickly. And so the function of shame was to make sure that you did not ever let someone find out things that would make them kick you out. Okay, so we'll start with that. And so that's important to recognize, because shame fits the facts when it's true that you're going to be rejected. Okay, and shame does not fit the facts when it's not true that you're not going to be rejected. So this can be a very difficult point for a lot of people, because there are a lot of things that can get you kicked out. All right. So one of the main things that can get you kicked out is having a mental disorder. Okay. In our everyday culture today, the two things that can get you kicked out really fast, one is having a mental disorder where people say, I don't want to hire you. I don't want to do this. I want you out. The other is engaging in a behavior. So for example, sexual abuse. The first thing you have to do with a person who has shame is you have to ask, does it fit the facts or doesn't it fit the facts? Okay. Now, to a large extent, it depends on who your community is. So for example, I've had clients who were ashamed to tell me things, and shame did not fit the facts because I was not going to reject him for it. But on the other hand, I had a client who was not only afraid I would kick her out so she wouldn't tell me things, but the things she was going to tell me, had she told a lot of other people, they more than likely would have rejected her. Okay? So I'll just give you this one story, for example. This was a client who had a great desire to go back to a mental hospital and wanted to be able to go back to a mental hospital, because when she was at a mental hospital, there was no demands on her very much. And she suddenly had this desire. She had been out for a really long time, all right? So I knew that something was going on with her, but she wouldn't tell me what it was. So I finally said, okay, you're too ashamed to tell me. And she said, yes. And I said, all right. Now, the problem with shame is that shame makes you avoid things. And not only are you avoiding telling me, but when you feel a lot of shame, you start avoiding yourself also. See, it's very hard to improve when you're running with shame. So I spent a long time on it's life and death that you tell me, because we've got to get the shame down or you can't solve the problem. And I don't know what the problem is, because you won't tell me what the problem is because you feel too ashamed to tell me. So after a while, I finally got her to tell me. Now, I could immediately understand why she felt shame for that, mainly because in everyday society, it is not a smart move to say to other people that you wish you were in a mental hospital and you would like to be able to sit there because you wouldn't have to do anything. Okay, so it's true. It would have led to some rejection, more than likely, in the average population. But since it wasn't fitting the facts with me, she had to tell me. Then the question was how to get her to talk about it enough to get the shame to go down. Now, the treatment for shame, when it doesn't fit the facts, is to get a person to constantly tell other people about it over and over and over so that they learn that they don't get rejected for it. So with this particular person, I told her, I said, you've got to imagine that you're on a TV show that's a comedy show, and you're going to tell everyone on the TV show and me about this. So it was, I wanted to be a mental patient. Okay, so she said it like that. I said, no, you've got to say it louder than that. And she said a little bit louder. And finally, after about, I don't know, 25 minutes or so of this practice over and over and over and over and over and over, she said, all right, so I want to be a mental patient. All right, is that enough? I said, fine, that's good. You can sit down. At which point, that shame with me went down. Okay. Now, I've seen it all over the place. I have people, the most common thing that you'll find is a person who feels shame when they were raped or shame when they were attacked by someone else. So this is the patient. Let's take the patient, many of which we have, who got a lot of sexual abuse when they were children, at which point you discover that they believe that they caused it, and therefore they feel ashamed of it. Now, often, why would they believe that they caused it? Generally, it's often because a young person either tries to get attention from someone else, wants to be loved by someone else, stays near someone else, etc. And then they ignore the fact that children are not guilty and the person who does it is guilty. And getting them to see that can be extraordinarily difficult. Now, this is an example of where the shame that the person has makes them start avoiding themselves. So they won't talk to themselves, okay, because they're telling themselves that they are the bad person. Had they not stayed with that person, had they not gone to that person's house, had they not sat on that person's lap, none of this would have happened. Okay, so there you have your opposite act. You have to ask, what would be the opposite action? And that opposite action is going to require that they talk to themselves, that they talk to themselves about the sadness of what happened to them. So in other words, the treatment for shame, when it doesn't fit the facts, always is constantly saying it over and over and over. So we had a person on one of our treatment teams once that felt very ashamed, because she had gotten down on her knees and tried to talk a patient into not killing herself. So she felt ashamed that she had gotten on her knees to do it. Okay. Now, is that something that would get her kicked out of our team? No. So we had that person had to watch themselves on video doing it over and over and over, and every week tell us about it. Until the shame went down. Because the main thing about shame is you've got to understand that, one, you're not going to be kicked out by others, but then you've got to practice not being kicked out by yourself, which is basically what happens usually, is the person not only thinks the community is going to kick them out, but they themselves start kicking themselves out. Now, shame, a lot of the time, not a lot, but some of the time, actually does fit the facts. And that's when you have to tell people to keep their mouth shut. So let's take the problem of borderline personality disorder. All right. Now, the facts of the matter are, I've had a lot of clients who do the following. I'm applying for a job. So I call you up and I say, and by the way, I'm borderline personality disorder. Okay. Why do they do that? Because they want to make sure you're not going to kick them out when you get there. The problem is that many people will kick you out if you tell them you're borderline personality disorder. This can even happen in emergency rooms where people start not treating you so well. So I always tell my clients, keep your mouth shut until someone gets to know you. And once they get to know you, they won't kick you out. And therefore, shame will not fit the facts. And so then you can tell people. So that's the story kind of on shame. And the key is, for many people, they think, oh, you can't say that shame fits the facts if you have a mental disorder. You know, it's like, how could you say that? So one of the other behaviors that you can do when you have a lot of shame is fight the society to get the society to stop kicking people out. So it used to be, but it's not so much anymore, that being gay, shame hit the facts. That if you told people you were gay, you lost your job. I mean, we all know that that used to be what the facts were. So shame, and then people felt ashamed of being gay. Okay. And the problem was it fit the facts, so you had to keep your mouth shut or you lost your job. But now, because so many gay people got together and started fighting the community to get the community to stop rejecting people who were gay, being gay, shame about being gay in most places now no longer fits the facts, which is not to say it doesn't fit the facts in some, because if you're, you know, Catholic religion, you could be told that you can't do this, that, or the other. So the secret to the whole thing is, one, to recognize, does it fit the facts? When it fits the facts and you believe that the facts are immoral or wrong, your other option is to fight against it. But if you're going to do that, you're going to want to join a community that thinks like you, that's not going to reject you. Because you don't want to be the person out there fighting against it and get rejected yourself from everybody else. You need to have a group who's not going to reject you. So that's the story of shame. And everybody has shame sooner or later, as far as I can tell. And the trick is, a good example is, in our culture, people feel ashamed of being really fat. Okay, so women who are very heavy will not put on a bikini and go to the beach. Why? Really, they can be looked down upon. In other words, shame can fit the facts for that occasionally. Now, if you go to Russia, on the other hand, nobody rejects anybody for being heavy in a bikini on the water. So in other words, when shame fits the facts in one culture, it may not fit the facts in some other culture. And so you always have the option to switch cultures and go join another group, which makes a lot of sense also.
As Marcia shared, when an expectation of being shamed is deflated, it can build a client's confidence. To get some additional insight, let's visit now with Dr. Kelly McGonigal, Dr. Ron Siegel, Bill O'Hanlon, and Dr. Joan Borisenko.
So you're going to look for the most common experience of being shamed or being stigmatized in our country. It probably is weight shaming. And I thought that was so interesting because, unlike predatory sexual behavior or even mental illness, although mental illness is approaching, you know, normative in over the lifetime, that most people will experience some form of mental suffering, if not a clinical diagnosis. But if you look at all the things that are shamed, and we know that being overweight or obese in this country is beyond normative, it is the majority, and yet it's still the thing that is most often shamed. And even people who are overweight and obese engage in shaming and self-shaming and other shaming. And it just made me think about how there's another side to shame. That is, you know, everyone, including Marcia, is talking about wanting to shame behaviors that truly are perceived to be a threat to society. And yet I think many people, when they experience shame themselves, it's not because there's anything inherently dangerous or morally wrong or ethically suspect with a behavior. It is a sense of being out of control and that I ought to be able to control some impulse that I find uncontrollable. And I think the shaming around weight has something to do with that, the perception that sort of it's our job in life to regulate our impulses and appetites.
That's an interesting thing to bring up. There was a lecture less than a year ago across the street on campus at UConn, and it was about weight and so forth. And it was a psychologist presenting, a research psychologist presenting her work, and she said that unlike most prejudices, you get the most judgment from your family around being overweight. Now, take let's say racism. You get most support from your family and perhaps judgment from outside. But with weight, you get judgment, misguided helpfulness, and so forth from inside the family. as well as outside the family, and that any kind of shame made it harder to correct any weight issues.
The reason that shame is used is because we believe it supports control and change, because that is, in theory, the function of it. And it's why I mentioned earlier how important it is to dissociate the momentary sort of direct experience we have versus the broader function an emotion is supposed to serve. And shame is one of those. We use it on others. Some people use it on others because they believe it is truly motivating and the most motivating thing. Whereas you said, the research is crystal clear that the shaming of others debilitates our own ability to change.
Shame is about cultural norms. And also that shame, particularly, I'm thinking of childhood shame and incest, as Martha Linehan was talking about, or molestation, where a child doesn't have a larger perspective and thinks that somehow it's all her or his own fault that this very shameful thing has happened. And they internalize that there's something desperately wrong with them rather than something desperately wrong with the abuser or parent. And I'd like to recommend in that light, as an intervention for clients that people may have who've been molested as children or abused as children, a wonderful book that came out in the 1970s, and it's called Bastard Out of North Carolina. Bastard Out of North Carolina. And it is the story of a girl from her earliest childhood to the time that she's about 12, who was abused and molested by a stepfather, and exactly how she thought about it and how she blamed herself. The author of this novel had herself been abused, and she wrote it as a corrective experience. She wanted it to be used in schools so that kids who were having this experience and could not come forward and were blaming themselves could normalize it and understand the fact that they were not at fault by living through and identifying with the character in the book. And this actually, there were a couple of court cases, it's very interesting, where local school boards tried to ban this book because it was so explicit, and where the author herself showed up to defend not only the book, but teachers who were using the book. Because here's the thing with shame. Not only do we want to hide it ourselves, society likes to hide it, schools like to hide it, and by normalizing it and bringing it out to kids when they're still kids, that they're not to blame.
Yeah, a couple of things come to mind for me. One is a story maybe I've told before, but it really fits this. A client of mine came in who'd been massively abused when she was younger by a acquaintance of the family, and she felt so terribly to blame and ashamed when she first came in. And at a certain point, we worked through a lot of that, and she was doing really well. And one time she came in and said, "Bill, I need to tell you something. Three times when I was an adolescent, I sought out this guy who had abused me to have sex with him." And I said, "Oh, well, you know, you were sexualized when you were very young." I started explaining to therapy. She said, no, I really need you to hear this. All the other ones he did to me, these three, I was responsible. I did something to make it happen. And I need to just, I'm ashamed of that. And I just need to say it. And, you know, to me, that was such a powerful thing that she took responsibility for actions she did. And before, she just made none of those distinctions. It was all her fault because she was a bad person, because she did something to attract it or something. She had it all confused in her head. And then she was crystal clear. Almost all of it wasn't my fault. I didn't do it. And a few of these, I bear some responsibility for this. I mean, he bears some responsibility too. That was really helpful to me because I'd been molested when I was a kid. And for a long time, I carried around, this is something shameful about me. And as I talked to more of my clients and as I heard this story, I thought, I didn't do that. He did it. The guy who molested me did that. And I got so clear that I would just speak very openly when I was teaching a workshop that had to do with trauma or abuse. I would just mention I was sexually abused by my grandfather. And people would come up to me and go, wow, that's so helpful because I was abused and I've never talked to anybody about it. And I was like, they said, you were so open about it. And I was like, it wasn't my fault. Why should I not be open about it? Because I've been a therapist for so long and people take on something someone else did to them as something that says something about how bad they were or how they were at fault. And I just got so clear on that over the years that people can't throw me with that. My clients can't throw me. I'm like, what? So what are you ashamed? Somebody did that to you? Did you do it? No. Well then, okay, so let's make that distinction. It's the exact distinction that Marsha Linehan made so clear. I think we've got to be so clear about that with our clients because they're confused about it.
As many of our experts noted, shame relies heavily on social and cultural norms. In the next module, we'll look at shame's effect on the body when we visit the neurobiology of shame. I'll see you there.